Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada ki. Thinking in this way, Lord Balaram was able to see with the eye of transcendental knowledge that all these calves and Krishna's friends were expansions of the form of Sri Krishna. Purport. Every individual is different. There are even differences between twin brothers. Yet when Krishna expanded himself as the boys and the calves, each boy and each calf appeared in its own original feature with the same individual way of acting, the same tendencies, the same color, the same dress, and so on. For Krishna manifested himself with all these differences. This was Krishna's opulence.
Om Agyanti Mirandasya Jnananjala Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasvai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadanti Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Shri Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitam Shri Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Stute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Ram Hare Hare. So Hare Krishna everyone. Very grateful to be here amongst all of you. At the same time quite embarrassed. So I'm seeking the blessings of all the devotees here. It's my first time giving Bhagavatam class here at the manor. So I would like to seek the blessings of all the senior devotees here. We're reading from the 10th canto, 13th chapter and 38th verse. So this chapter is known as the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And in the 10th canto, whenever there's been a demon or whenever there's been a certain pastime, the acharyas has commented that there's a certain lesson or certain demon within ourselves that can be eradicated by reading these pastimes. And the Brahma Vimohan Leela literally means the bewilderment of Lord Brahma. And this represents, the acharyas explained, that of illusion. So illusion by definition means seeing an object for which it is not. In the medical world, hallucination means seeing something that's not present. So the difference is that illusion is you are seeing something, but you're not seeing it for what it actually is. And there's two sides of illusion. There is the subject, Chaitanya Charanpuri explains really wonderfully, and then there's the object. The subject means ourselves and our conditionings, and the object is that what we are seeing. So an example is when we're walking past a pub, a devotee who's not been conditioned to drinking alcohol will not be triggered off by the object of alcohol. Whereas someone who's accustomed to drinking alcohol and has only given up maybe a few months ago, when they walk past that same pub, they'll see alcohol and they'll be very tempted to drink it. So the point is that we come into illusion not because of the object, but because of ourselves, the subject, and our conditionings. Because these objects act like a trigger, but within ourselves, the bullets are already present. But illusion in the material world can take us away from Krishna, whereas illusion in the spiritual world is known as Leela. It's actually there to bring us closer to Krishna. So then there's the concept of Mahamaya and Yogamaya. So this pastime actually has a combination of both. And there's Balaram, which in this verse is mentioned, and there's Lord Brahma. So Yoga Maya can bring us closer to Krishna, as we've seen in the 10th canto. For example, when Yashoda Maya forgets that Krishna is God, only by forgetting that Krishna is God is she able to chase him with a grinding mortar and catch him and bind him with ropes to the trees, right? It's explained that because of this love and because of this Yoga Maya, Yashoda Maya was able to capture Krishna, something which was not previously able to be done by the greatest sages in the world. Right? So in this pastime, like I mentioned, there's Lord Brahma and Lord Baladev. And they both come under Maya, but of two different sorts. Lord Balaram is under Yoga Maya, whereas Lord Brahma is under Mahamaya. So it's explained that by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the commentary to this verse and the last few verses, that nearly a year passed since the cowherd boys and the calves had been stolen by Lord Brahma. And five or six days, before that 1 year was complete, Krishna revealed to Balaram that actually it was himself manifesting as all these cowherd boys and calves. So it's quite interesting actually, because Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that there was four layers of Yoga Maya placed on Balaram, and it took him different stages to overcome each layer and then realize that this was Krishna. So after the first layer of Yoga Maya was released, Balaram was thinking that all these cowherd boys and calves, how have they just come about? And he developed great affection for these cowherd boys and calves. He actually felt the same love that he felt for Krishna, for these new boys and new calves. And actually, a few verses before in the purport, Prabhupada explains that one of the reasons for manifesting this leela is actually to the parents, the gopis and gopas, the elder gopas, wanted Krishna as their child, but they never had that opportunity. So now Krishna manifesting himself as these cowherd boys, the parents had the opportunity to have Krishna as their own son. So that's one of the reasons for the pastime and for Krishna expanding himself in this way. After the second layer of Yoga Maya was destroyed or alleviated by Krishna, Balaram was thinking that it may be the demigods that Jankinath Prabhu spoke on that verse yesterday that has displayed and manifested as these cowherd boys and calves. After the third layer of Yoga Maya was destroyed, Balaram was thinking, this can't be anyone else but my master Krishna. And then in the fourth, this verse today, through the Jnana Chakshus or through Vayuna Chakshus, through transcendental knowledge, Balaram realizes that actually this is my Lord, this is Krishna. So it's really interesting. It took even Balaram four layers, took him this long to realize. But again, this was due to Krishna's arrangement and due to his leela. But in reality, of course, Krishna and Balaram are never separated. One time, Prabhupada was giving class in a big public program, and the mic stand wasn't as sturdy as this. So it was just moving all over the place. And he said to one of his disciples, take off your Brahmin thread. I want to use it to tie the mic stand and just make the mic prevent it from moving. And the people just look around like, how can Prabhupada ask the disciple to remove the Brahmin thread, you know? And Prabhupada anyway asked him to. He tied up the mic and he said that anyway, Balaram's been engaged in Krishna's service. Balaram is never separated from Krishna. So the point is that the paraphernalia, all these items of worship represents Lord Balaram, and he's never separate from Krishna. So in the same way, in this pastime, Balaram was never actually separated from Krishna, but just for the sake of manifesting these pastimes on this earth, Krishna arranged it so in this way. So another important thing that Prabhupada mentions here in the purport is that Krishna's opulence. Krishna manifested himself with every detail of the cowherd boys. He didn't just randomly make any boy all the same, wearing the same clothes. Every detail was that of the boy which Lord Brahma stole before. And this was Krishna's greatness. A few weeks ago, a few of us were in Wales, about 100 of us, students. And it was a retreat with His Holiness Devaramit Swami. And it was for new students who had been interested in Krishna consciousness. So the topic was happiness. And sometimes, you know, people ask weird and wonderful questions. So it was time for question and answer. And one boy raised his hand. And this is a, remember, this is a brand new audience. And there's one boy, he just asks, why is it that Krishna has 16,108 wives? And like all the devotees that are there, we just dropped our heads thinking like, what kind of question is this? There's all these new people here. But His Holiness Devaramrita Maharaj gave such a wonderful answer. He said, Krishna's God. So we should be asking, why is it that he only has 16,108 wives? Right? Because truth or any moral standards in this world is set to the bar that Krishna raises it at. So the point is, in this particular verse and this particular pastime, it also manifests Krishna's opulence. And this helps us see Krishna everywhere. When we see pastimes like this, when we see Krishna raising or lifting Govardhan Hill, it's quite easy to see that Krishna is God. But actually more difficult is seeing Krishna on day-to-day, in our day-to-day lives, right? Arjuna, even in the Gita, asks to Krishna, like, how do I see you everywhere? How do I see you in everything? And how do I remember you all the time? And Krishna therefore gives him a list of different material manifestations that he is present in. So that's one of the ways we can see Krishna everywhere. And the one thing that struck me particularly in this purport, what I want to really focus on, is Prabhupada starts the purport by saying every individual is different. There are even differences between twin brothers. So Prabhupada here is really emphasizing the fact of individuality. And this was a really prominent principle that Lord Chaitanya also propagated. So from the Madhva Sampradaya, Lord Chaitanya took this principle of smashing or really trying to defeat Mayavada philosophy. And in our Siddhanta, in our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, that of individuality is very prominent. And the Gita explains that we're all individual souls who have a unique individual relationship with Krishna. But we also have a different physical and subtle individual nature as well. So within our institution, we're really well focused and profound on the fact that we're all individual living beings in a spirit soul sense. But often the focus is taken away from focusing on individuals on the subtle and physical level as individuals. So I want to quote Mother Urmila here on this very regard. She quotes, members of ISKCON have a strong understanding of uniqueness in spiritual identity of an individual soul, as this is one of the major teachings of our tradition. Unfortunately, the individual uniqueness of a person on a material level, body and subtle elements, is often overshadowed by our understanding and emphasis on the spiritual ideal. Right? So, I do want to focus on both. So I want to start with the spiritual level. So we understand from the Nectar of Devotion that Rupa Goswami explains that every individual can have five different types of direct relationships with the Lord. Does anyone know what these are? In any order, you can shout them out. Dasya, Sakya, yes. Vatsalya, Madhurya. And Shanta, Shantaras. Exactly. So we have that relationship in neutrality. And then we have servitude, which is Dasya Ras. And the example of one of the biggest or best examples in our philosophy or in the Ramayana is that of Hanuman, right? He was completely sold out to Lord Ram. He was like the epitome of Dasya Ras. One time in the Ramayana, it's explained that Sita Devi was getting ready in the morning and she was applying kumkum on her head. And Hanuman walked past and asked Sita Devi, like, what is this red mark that you're placing on her head? He had never seen something like this before. And Sita Devi said, it's a mark to show that I belong to Lord Ram. And then Hanuman took this and he went away and he got a whole bowl of kumkum and he applied it all over his body. Then later that day, Lord Ram and Lord Sita were asking the assembled members, where is Hanuman? I haven't seen him all day today. And at that moment, a red fairy ball just walked past. And everyone was looking like, who is this person that's just walked into our assembly? And then when he came closer, they found that it was actually Lord Hanuman. And Lord Ram asked him, and Sita asked him, like, what are you doing? And Hanuman was saying that Sita Devi was applying this kumkum in the morning, saying that if I apply this, it shows that I'm Lord Ram's. So therefore, I didn't want to just apply a bit, because I'm not just partly Lord Ram's. I want to show that I'm fully surrendered to Lord Ram. So he covered his whole body in kumkum. There's another beautiful folk tale that shows that Krishna also reciprocates in this relationship. It's explained that one time Hanuman had heard a rumor that Lord Ram carries a big diary of all the devotees that are dear to him or that remember him all the time. So then Hanuman asks Narad Muni, could you do me a big favor, please? Could you go to Lord Ram and ask him, or can you see if my name's in this diary? So Narad Muni goes, he approaches Lord Ram and says, my dear Lord Ram, I heard that there's a big diary that you keep with devotees' names that are close to you. And then Lord Ram pulled out a big diary and he gave it to Narad Muni. So Narad Muni was flicking through all the pages. First, he was looking for his own name, of course. So on the last page, the last name was Narad Muni. But in this diary, Hanuman's name was not to be seen at all. Right? Can you imagine someone who's given their life to Lord Ram, his name wasn't even in the book? So then Narad Muni was perplexed. And then Lord Ram stood up and he was just walking. And a small diary then came out, fell out of his chest. And then Narad Muni took this diary, opened up the first page, and the first name on this was Hanuman. So then he was asking Lord Ram, like, why is it that you have two diaries? Is it because you're so busy that you have to, you know, for one diary you have to write down one schedule, the other diary you have to write something else? And Lord Ram then explained to Narad Muni, the big diary represents all those individuals that constantly think of me. All day they're meditating on me. But the small diary are those individuals that I constantly meditate on. And Hanuman was on that diary. So that's of Dasya Ras, servitude. And then we have that of friendship. The Gopas, Sri Dharma, they had that relationship of friendship with Krishna. And then we have paternity, or Vatsalya Ras, that of parenthood. It's actually interesting how Krishna reciprocates with this one in this in the 10th canto. It's explained that when Krishna went back to the spiritual world, he remembered three mothers. Does anyone know who these were? Three mothers that he remembered when he went back to the spiritual world. Devaki, yeah. Yashoda. Putana, yeah. So it's interesting. Putana, who tried to kill Krishna, was also remembered by the Lord at the time of death, or time of departure. And it's explained that just even though she was trying to poison Krishna with her breast milk, just the fact that she offered her breast and offered the milk to Krishna, he accepted her as a mother. So Vatsalya Ras, and then Madhurya Ras, loving devotion. But even within these relationships, it's important to understand that each person here has an individual role, an individual unique relationship with Krishna within this relationship. Even in the Rasa Leela explained in the 10th canto, amongst the gopis, only certain gopis entailed or was part of the actual Rasa dance, and within the Rasa dance different gopis were experiencing different things. So it's not just that if you're having Vatsalya Ras with Krishna, it's the same. Devaki's relationship with Krishna was far different to Yashoda's relationship with Krishna. So this is some thoughts on how on a spiritual level we're also unique. That's on the level of the soul. But then the Gita explains that, of course, we have the subtle and physical differences as well. And this is all to do with personality and the psychophysical nature of an individual person. And the importance for this is because if we understand the psychophysical nature, if we understand the personality of someone, then we can understand what motivates them. We can understand how they act when they're relaxed. We can understand how they act when they're under stress. And we can also understand how we should interact with that person to please them. Right? So I want to start with a model from the Gita itself, which is, of course, the model of Varna. So we have the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. So, of course, we don't distinguish because Krishna says that all these are emanating from my body itself and they should be respected equally. So those that are Brahmanas are inclined in certain ways. So that of peacefulness, truthfulness. They like teaching and they have these certain qualities. Kshatriyas, like lording over, working in the justice system, working in the governments. Vaishyas by nature, want to bring up the economy. They sold out to the spiritual master, the scriptures. And the Shudras offer obeisances to the others, want to serve. The Gita explains they're also very clean. So they also have these qualities. So like I explained before, it's not that we discriminate between the two, all four of them. It's that they're all respected and they have There's a need for all of these within society itself. So then we go to different levels of different psychological models which have been established now in the modern world. And not all of them completely disagree with what the Bhagavatam and the Gita say. A lot of it goes hand in hand. I'm not going to dive into them today, but for note, there's models like Myers-Briggs, which give you some analysis of your own personality and help you understand the personality of other people. There's, of course, the famous DISC model. And there's so many that you can find online to help us understand ourselves on that level. And understanding ourselves on this is really important because for four reasons, or three reasons I want to share today. One is for relationship sakes, whether that's relationships with other devotees, with our spouses, with senior devotees, whoever it may be, non-devotees even. Second is for the sake of preaching, and the third is for the sake of leadership. So the first one I want to focus on is that of relationships. Can anyone figure out, or does anyone have any suggestions, why understanding ourselves on a personality level and understanding other people is important for the sake of relationships? Anyone? Yep. Yep. Perfect. So the concept of relationships actually from the spiritual world, the term rasa, but when it comes here, it's actually perverted. And an example to illustrate this is Krishna acts in such a way which he only wants to see if we're performing devotional service and Krishna sees that we're being disturbed in performing this devotional service, Krishna will actually be happy that if we stop and perform it in a much more joyful way. Whereas you find Duryodhan in the first chapter of the Gita explaining that he's boasting, look at all these people that are ready to give their lives for my sake. So Duryodhan's actually happy when people are suffering, but Krishna's actually pleased when we're performing devotional service in a really happy manner. So the concept of relationships, today we're taught that we should treat other people how we want to be treated, right? But the Vedic philosophy goes even beyond that. It shows that we should treat people how they want to be treated. But how do we know how they want to be treated unless we understand that person? Right? See, spiritual life is the same. Everyone talks about being Krishna conscious. But if we understand Krishna's consciousness, then we can be Krishna conscious. If we understand what Krishna wants, then we can be Krishna conscious. They say if we understand Krishna's consciousness, then we can understand Krishna's characteristics. And stories to illustrate this is from Krishna himself. You know, in the Mahabharata, they call the Mahabharata the book of war and the Bhagavatam the book of love. But Prabhupada explains whether it's the book of love or the book of war, Krishna's all sweet. So in the Mahabharata, it's explained that, you know, sometimes Balaram just has these funny thoughts. And his first disciple was Duryodhan. And can you believe that Balaram wanted his own sister, Subhadra, to marry Duryodhan? No one in the world loved Duryodhan. Even his own wife didn't love him. Out of loyalty, out of chastity, out of duty, she stayed with him. But it wasn't love. But here you find Balaram trying to arrange his own sister's marriage with Duryodhan. So Krishna is very sensitive. See, he's really mindful of relationships. So what he did is he said to Arjun, you come to my house, or you come to our palace, and you dress in the guise of a sannyasi. And Arjun was thinking like, how can I do this, right? How can I put on a dress of a sannyasi? Because once you put that on, you can't take it off. And Krishna said, no, don't worry, you're not actually taking sannyas, you're just having the external attire. So Arjun came, and Krishna said, I'll arrange for Subhadra to serve you dinner. And then you can see in that short time whether you like each other. So then that happened, and Subhadra served him, and they both ended up liking each other. And therefore, it wasn't arranged marriage, it was actually a runaway case. They both ended up getting married. So Krishna is also sensitive. He didn't just go to Balaram and say, what are you thinking? Why do you want to arrange the marriage of our sister, of your sister with Duryodhan? No, he arranged this whole situation and he was sensitive to the emotions of both parties here. And he didn't force Subhadra to marry Arjun either. He said, only if you like him in this interaction, then you can take it forward. So yeah, and Prabhupada was also like this. One time in France, there was one lady that was coming for some programs, a Western lady. And she was very self-conscious. She was a model previously. And the devotees would just tell her every time she would come into class that you're not the body. And she was getting flabbergasted. She was like, this is not what I've come to hear, because she's used to a completely different life, you know, dressing in a certain way, covering with makeup, you know, for a modeling career. And now she's just been told constantly that she's not the body. So she left the temple, and a few weeks later, Prabhupada was arriving in France for the first time. And she said, I really want to meet this Swami. Like, they've always speak about him. And she said, all right, I'm going to go to the temple for the last time now. And I just want to see what Prabhupada, what all the fuss is about. So the devotees explained to Prabhupada that this lady is like this, and she'd been coming previously, and she no longer comes. And then Prabhupada said, he called her out from the audience, and he just said, on this day, by the way, she came in a really inappropriate dress. It was quite short dress, covered in tons of makeup to the temple, and all the devotees were just looking at her, and they were just waiting. It was pin drop silence to see what Prabhupada would say to her. And Prabhupada looked at her from the audience, and he said to her, you're looking really beautiful. He said that to her. Can you imagine the acharya, paramsa devotee, nitya siddha, saying that to this lady, that you're looking beautiful? And what she was amazed at was, actually, she knew that Prabhupada didn't actually mean it in that way. He was just saying it, was actually the fact that someone of his stature could say this and not be affected and not care what the others would think. And that actually made her come back to the temple again and again and again, and she became a devotee from that. So Prabhupada was also like that. So the concept of relationships means that of two. And the importance of understanding individuality on this matter is that when we understand what the other person wants, then we can interact with them. See, even in the example, as a grihastha, people have explained that traditionally in Vedic times, before you consume a meal, you should go out into the public and ask three times, is anyone hungry? Does anyone want any food to eat? Does anyone want any food to eat? You'd repeat that three times. How many of you do that here? How many of you do that? But actually, it's also explained that those who then receive that food, like the brahmanas or those that are renunciates, they are also instructed that they should only accept that food if there's no other means of them having something to eat, and if the grihasthas have eaten and they're satisfied, then only they should accept the food. But what we focus on is that the grihastha should give the food, right? We don't focus on accepting the rules for acceptance. So in the relationship, rasa means there's more than one. It's interaction between more than one person. So we also in that way have to see, what is it that the other person wants? Am I just acting in a way which is beneficial for me and not completely understanding what the other person wants? So we can understand how to be sensitive. And Krishna himself was an example. The second aspect of understanding, or the importance of understanding individuality, is that of for preaching, right? Anyone want to shout out why they think that's important for this case? It's quite similar in one sense. Why understanding someone's nature or the person we're speaking to is important for preaching? Anyone? Okay, so there's one quote that I want to share. They say that expert preacher in Bhagavatam and the Gita is one who's able to take this medicine and give it to someone in a way which they can digest, right? Often we find that philosophy is kind of shoved down the throat of people, and it's not palatable for that person at all. They're not on the level. So one of the most expert preachers in the Bhagavatam I wanted to speak about today. Anyone know? Or anyone know any expert preachers that are mentioned in the Bhagavatam throughout? Sorry? Narad Muni, exactly. So, Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nandaki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanaki. So, Narad Muni throughout the Bhagavatam interacts with different people in different ways to make them devotees according to their particular circumstance. So the first story that I want to share is that of in the fourth canto of King Prachandibhaksha. So he's a big king, very opulent, had so many riches, but he was very materialistic. So Narad Muni could have just gone to him and told him that you're in Maya and that you should give up all your opulence, give up all your riches and just surrender to Krishna. So the king, being naturally humble, he may have listened for some time, but his heart would have become cold and he would not have been able to accept the philosophy. What Narad Muni actually did is he manifested a story within a story to illustrate the point. So he said to the king that, I know one person who's a king, and his name is Puranjan. And this king is very materialistic. He's just focused on riches, and he's suffering from this. And by the end of that story, King Pratarniprakshat realized that he was just like this Puranjan. He was just like this king that Narad Muni was speaking about. He also was very materialistic, very focused on external wealth rather than focusing on something much more internal. And that's how Narad Muni revealed to Pratarniprakshat that actually he should take up the devotional life. And his heart was really open to take up the philosophy from this. Right? And it was the same with Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was, you know, he wanted to place his head on the lap of his father, on the throne. And then his stepmother tells him that you're not eligible to take the throne and have a close relationship with your father. You must perform penances in the forest. Right? It's explained in the Bhagavatam that Dhruva Maharaj felt like he was bathing in boiling hot oil when his stepmother told him this. So he was going out into the forest trying to seek the Lord, but not for self-realization, but rather so that he could take up the throne for materialistic reason, at least initially. So Narad Muni didn't stop him. Rather, Narad Muni told him that you should focus on the Lord in this way, and he initiated him with the 12-syllable mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And through practicing the devotional service, Dhruva Maharaj became purified. And he too then became a pure devotee. Another example is Valmiki Muni. Valmiki was looking for a perfect being, right? He said to Narad Muni, show me someone who's perfect. And then Narad Muni started disclosing the glories of Lord Ram. And then it's explained that one day there was a hunter. He was looking for a cruncher bird. It's a really beautiful type of bird. I even Googled it. There's some images. It's really, really beautiful. Valmiki wanted to curse this hunter. But that curse turned into the first shlokas of the Ramayana. So Narad Muni was very sensitive to Valmiki also. And Prabhupada was also like this. One time there was a story where there was a Formula One driver or race car driver that came to Prabhupada. And for 3 hours, Prabhupada just spoke to him about cars. Can you imagine? Prabhupada was so busy, so many people to meet, and he's speaking to this person about cars. And then the Formula One driver mentioned in the conversation that while driving, while racing, that I've seen death sometimes. You know, some people have died. And then Prabhupada said to him, whoa, his eyes lit up. And he said, so you must be an expert on death. And the Formula One driver was perplexed. He was saying, no. And Prabhupada said, but I am an expert on death. So then for 3 hours, Prabhupada gave him philosophy. Right? So first, he just sat and heard. And 3 hours after, Prabhupada gave him philosophy. But also, Prabhupada will sometimes give it directly. One time in India, they were building temples constantly. And Prabhupada was giving morning class. And one man put his hand up and he said, Prabhupada, like, why is it that you're building so many temples, right? There's already so many temples in the world. Why are you building more and more temples? There's one down the road, there's another temple here, and now you're just building your own ISKCON temple. I think it was during the construction of ISKCON Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada looked at him, and he was sitting next to his son. And he said to him, there's so many children in the world. Why is it that you want your own son? Why is it you want your own child? And the point was that each of us want to have our own personal offering to give to Krishna. And that's what Prabhupada is saying. From these temples, we also want to give our own personal offering to Krishna and have this as an educational establishment where people can come and learn. So Prabhupada was also direct, but he knew when to be sensitive also. And that was the same as Narad Muni. So also when we're preaching, we often see sometimes, whether it be on the streets, whether it be at university, whether it be in the corporate world, that people are of different levels. People have previous misconceptions, previous ideas of philosophy. So we have to interact with that person according to the level that they're at. Just like Narad Muni did and just like Prabhupada did. Otherwise, it could actually be detrimental to the spiritual life of that devotee, of that person who potentially could become a devotee. And the third thing I wanted to share is that of leadership. They say that a leader should be able to engage each person under them or in their team according to that person's nature. It's actually selfish of a leader to not make the most of those that are under or in his team. Mahatma Gandhi said, "There are my people, I must follow them." Right? And this concept of servant leadership is so prominent in our Shastra. It's not leading so much from the front, but it's leading from the background. And Prabhupada was like this, because one time, I think again in Germany, Prabhupada was giving a lecture on the Varnashram system. And one man, he raised up and he raised his hand. He stood up and said to Prabhupada, "So you're speaking about Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras. So you're saying that you're a Brahmana, right? And we're all Shudras." And Prabhupada said, "No, I'm actually none of these four classes. I'm just a servant of all these other classes." So Prabhupada was like that. As a leader, someone who could have had so much adoration, name, fame, glory, he was actually leading from the back, serving the people. In the initial days of 26 Second Avenue, when you know we visited last year, and with 120 of our youth group this year are also going to visit, and we're going to be there on Radhasmi this year. In the initial days, it was explained that no one would even come to 26 Second Avenue, and whoever would come, Prabhupada would cook for each person. He would then personally clean after each person, and all day Prabhupada would be serving while transcribing, while trying to preach simultaneously. And then one day, one boy came up to Prabhupada and said to Prabhupada, "Do you need a bit of help washing or cleaning here?" And Prabhupada's face lit up. And he said, "I was waiting for the day someone would ask me to help." But Prabhupada wasn't like that. He wasn't commanding respect. He wasn't demanding respect. He was just serving, and that came anyway. And that this concept of servant leadership is prominent throughout, if you look in the Bhagavatam. So these are the three things I wanted to share in terms of understanding individuality on a psychophysical nature. On the spiritual soul level, we obviously understand it throughout our literature, but also on a practical level within ISKCON and within our organization, if we understand it in these ways, then it can help our relationships with the people around us, help our preaching, and also help motivate those that are maybe serving with us or under us. And therefore, this will help us understand and see Krishna everywhere. So these are just some thoughts that we wanted to share today. And just to summarize, the first point was to distinguish between Yogamaya and Mahamaya, and understanding that illusion in the material sense can take us away from Krishna, but in the spiritual sense, it's Leela and it can bring us closer to Krishna. The second point that we wanted to share was that of Krishna's opulence and seeing Krishna everywhere. See, the Bhagavad Gita is all about harmonizing opposites. Like I said, seeing Krishna in the spiritual world and doing like phenomenal big feats, big tasks is easy because, you know, that's the characteristics of God. But seeing him on a day-to-day basis is much harder. And Krishna harmonizes opposites in the Gita. See, he harmonizes our effort with his mercy. In the Gita, if he said that just by my mercy you can attain perfection, then everyone will become lazy. In the same way, if he said that it's only by your own effort that you can attain perfection, then everyone will become quite pessimistic. But then there's the harmonization of opposites, where Krishna says, you have to put some effort in, but at the same time, my mercy is there to reciprocate. So that's another way we can see Krishna everywhere. And then the last point, of course, was understanding individuality. So this is some thoughts that we wanted to share today. So I think we have a few minutes if anyone has any comments, corrections, questions.